Welcome to the Middle Chamber Books and Music Podcast. I'm your podcast host and bookseller at middlechamberbooks.com, Steve Lubetkin. The first novel by Rabbi Phil Cohen, Nick Bone's Underground, was selected by a panel of judges as a finalist in the Jewish Book Council's 2019 National Jewish Book Awards in the category of debut novel. Drawing from his years of rabbinic education, doctoral studies, life experiences, wit, and imagination, Cohen's novel is a thought-provoking wild ride through a dystopian New York City. Nick Bone's Underground is the first of a planned trilogy and takes the reader on a fast-paced journey filled with colorful and eccentric characters, both human and artificial. While searching for a childhood companion, Shmuley Shimmer, inventor of a popular designer drug with serious side effects, Nick Friedman, a.k.a. Nick Bones, enters the bowels of New York City, encountering dangers that eventually lead to many unexpected truths about the past. He searches a peek into an imaginative yet dark world that asks the reader numerous challenging questions like, is it possible to overcome the burden of past deeds? What's the nature of being human? Can a computer actually embody human characteristics and become spiritual? We'll answer some of these questions and a few others in a conversation with Rabbi Phil Cohen on today's Middle Chamber Books podcast. We'll be back after this.
Turn your podcasting passion into profits. The book, The Business of Podcasting, describes the business side of podcasting, including how to become a professional podcaster. You'll learn about positioning your clients' expertise through podcasting, too, plus the best business models, how to find clients, and much more. Visit thebusinessofpodcasting.com.
Phil, thanks for joining us on the Middle Chamber Books and Music Podcast. You have kind of a dual career thing going on. You are a rabbi by training and working in the rabbinate, but you're also writing these novels and this sort of a dystopian near future kind of a novel. Why don't you tell us about the journey? How did you get from being a rabbi to being the author of this kind of a future science fiction-y kind of a thing?
So there are two pieces to this, I guess. One is when I, in addition to having an ordination as a rabbi, I have a doctorate in Jewish thought from Brandeis. And as I was writing my dissertation, this idea popped into my head about what it was originally set in real time, about this aging college professor who does private detective work on the side. In some sense, it's a fairly standard trope. Not necessarily a professor, but some professional who also gets dragged into detective cases. I mean, you know, Rabbi Small in the Kellerman series, you know, Friday the Rabbi Slept Late was a similar one. But I put it away. I put away my childish things when I finished the dissertation, and I went into work in various aspects of the rabbinate. But I really have for a very long time been interested in engaging in the work of creative writing. Did a little bit in college. I made an effort, a small and unsuccessful effort, to get into an MFA program after college. So my rabbi journey landed me in Prescott, Arizona, in a small temple there, and found myself taking creative writing classes with a very good author and a very good teacher named Susan Lang at the community college there. And so I rolled out this manuscript that had about 100 pages to it, and I started reworking it and turning it in, and it became my contribution to the class. And it turned out that I felt really good about it, and it turned out I wasn't bad at it. So the short of it is, I started looking into how I could get more professional education in writing fiction in particular. I found that when I would give pieces of my writing to people to read, I would get one of three reactions, and none of them was helpful. One is, even though a person said that he or she would read it, he didn't read it. Or he'd read it and say, I don't like it, but couldn't tell me why they didn't like it. Or they'd say, I like it, you should submit it to the New Yorker. And none of that was really particularly helpful. I mean, everybody was well-intended, and that was nice. So I learned about these low-residency MFA programs that dot America, maybe 60 or 70 of them, and got admitted to one of them in Louisville, Spalding University. And it took about 3 years, and I ended up with an MFA. And along the way, one of my two main projects was filling out, working seriously on the novel that's coming out at the end of November, Nick Bowen's Underground.
You were already a rabbi when you decided to go into the writing project. How do you balance the two? Was the writing a side avocation, or was it something that you thought maybe I'll pursue this instead or after I retire?
Well, I'm not planning to retire anytime soon. What I have been able to do for a number of years, more simply, is on good weeks, and not every week is a good week, I can devote 15, 20 hours a week to writing, even when I was working full time. So I think that answers your question. It's not that interesting. But I get to sit down early in the morning and work at the computer, and then afterwards get on with my day.
So in this book, Nick Friedman becomes Nick Bones. Right. This is a story about some, I guess it's near future, because some of the dates seem to make the people contemporaries to where we live now in the early 21st century.
It's about 10 or 15 years in the future.
Okay.
One iteration of it was that it was just a completely parallel world, and I wasn't worrying about dates, but that was the advice of one editor. But another editor said it should be put into some kind of real time. So the chronology is right. It's about 10 or 15 years into the future.
So Professor Friedman gets approached by the father of his old high school buddy, who has a notorious reputation, and it involves artificial intelligence and unexpected dangers. Right. Where did you come up with all of the plot lines, and what does it tell you? There's a lot of Jewish stuff mixed in, which I assume comes from your experience as a rabbi and as an educator in Jewish thought. How do you make the two work?
Well, let me answer the second part first. Anything that I'm going to write, And if I'm lucky enough to continue writing, healthy enough and able to produce them, I have the idea for two other series, and they all have some form of Jewish content. I think that that's just too strongly embedded in my identity. I have out a small ebook of 13 short stories, and not all of them have Jewish content, but most of them do. In this case, in Hebrew, we have an expression, lahavdil. So I'm going to compare myself to Chaim Potok, but lahavdil means not really. In this case, it would be an act of chutzpah for me to say I'm like Potok, except that all of his writing, none of it science fiction, but all of his writing pursued the problematic of Judaism in the modern world. Or orthodoxy versus non-orthodoxy. So, The Chosen, which was very important to me when I read it, is about this conflict between, in that case, modern orthodoxy and Hasidism in New York City, but it was really also about being a Jew in the modern world. And so it seems essential to me that anything I'm going to write is going to have some sense of Jewish component to it. In this case, there's this parody on a certain Hasidic sect that will remain unnamed. And the character, the main character, although he doesn't explore it that series that deeply, has been he's kind of cynical about religion, but his AI machine, she's the one who's religious and carries the whole thing forward. Now, as to where the ideas come from, I mean, you talk to any writer about his or her writing, these ideas come sporadically and then get developed. I mean, it's the fun of being creative. Um, that's my best answer to that question.
In the world of fiction, there are a lot of authors who have been influenced, you mentioned a couple of them, by their Jewish experience. What advantages or disadvantages do you see from the Jewish experience in the fiction world? Is it a plus, or does it maybe constrain people if they focus too much on it?
Well, I think, you know, and here too, the Lahavdil has to come into effect here, you know. Back in the day, the golden age of American writing, there were three well-known American Jewish writers, Philip Roth, Saul Bellow, and Bernard Malamud. And I was just reading an article today that said of the three, Bellow had the least sort of Jewish content in his work. But all of them reflected on their identities. All of them used fiction in part, not entirely, of course, but in part to play out their own actual identities. So to some extent, that's what I'm doing here. But no writer who's going to be an authentic writer is going to feel constrained by his or her ethnicity or ideology or something. It's rather going to enhance it. It's going to enhance it. Now, then the question is, who's going to read the book? And the answer to that is, I hope everybody will read it. But I'm reminded, going back to Kellerman, I'm blanking on his first name, Harry Kemmelman. He sold 7 million of those Rabbi Small novels, and I understand that most of his readers were non-Jews they were using his books as an entree into understanding something about Judaism.
So, do you think it helps non-Jews to approach an understanding of Judaism, to read books by Jewish authors? I mean, not all Jewish authors look very, you know, in a universally kindly way towards Judaism. Some are sympathetic, but some are not. And if they pick up the wrong book, they might get a view that was shaped by someone who had maybe an unhappy experience.
Yeah, I mean, Philip Roth's Judaism is very sparse, but his Jewishness, I'm not sure if he's the one you have in the back of your mind, his Jewishness is extraordinary.
Oh, yeah.
And I think,
he's more of what my father-in-law would have described as a secular Jew.
Yeah, he's a secular Jew.
Jewish by ethnicity, but not necessarily a spiritual component.
Those three writers, all those three writers I cited were secular, but Bella was fluent in Yiddish and translated Yiddish. Malamud was able to create Yiddish syntax in his English. And Philip Roth not everything he wrote, but when most of his characters have some Jewishness in him, and I'm not even referring to Portnoy, but other characters as well. I mean, I think a reader will, a discriminating reader will be able to pull away from the book, perhaps with some of what the author intended, but also be entertained. I guess that's the best I can say to that question.
You mentioned the fluency of some of the authors in Yiddish, and Yiddish is not widely spoken in the Jewish community, but it seems like Yiddish words have become embedded in English to the point where even non-Jews use Yiddish expressions in their daily conversation.
There was an old MASH episode, and Colonel Potter was talking to headquarters, wherever it was he talked to headquarters, and they were going back and forth, and somewhere in the conversation, Colonel Potter says, "Emes," which is, you know, Yiddish for "is it true," which comes from the Hebrew. Colonel Potter was the paradigmatic Gentile, but somehow the writers of that script thought it was appropriate for him to use that Yiddish word. Yeah, that's true. You know, again, a name that's not coming to my head, but you know, there's a book by this popularizer of Yiddish, a nice fellow who wrote a book on how. It was a lexicon of Yiddish words that had come into English.
Eliyahu Rustin. Joys of Yiddish.
Yeah, maybe so. Yeah. I think it's called Spanglish. Not Spanglish, but yeah, right. It might have been Leo Rossman.
So what's next? What other writing projects have you got on the burner or front or back burner? Take your pick.
When I got this Master of Fine Arts degree, everybody writes a thesis, a creative thesis in their field, poetry, fiction, drama, whatever. And so I have a better part of a book to be made out of that. That takes place in 1947, just before the 29th of November, when the UN voted to partition Palestine. So that lies in the background. And this also is a person. He's a younger person, I guess in his mid-20s, who gets drawn into a gun-running scheme for Palestine. And there too, I mean, there it's you know, historical fiction. It's New York in the 40s. It's Israel coming into being, and it's this kid also struggling. Well, he was in the army, and he was with the troop among the American troops that liberated Dachau. And when he goes into Dachau, he's a German Jewish immigrant. He came to America before 1920. And when he's in Dachau, he runs into his first cousin, a woman, and this haunts him throughout the whole book. So that's the background for that book. But right now, I'm actually working on a sequel for Nick Bones. I've gotten that underway. So that's my next project. It's the sequel, and then I'll see where this other book about New York City in 1947 goes.
So I think I get the impression that you're very focused on fictional creations, nothing really moving towards nonfiction or documentary.
If the good Lord should give me the time and the place and the ability, I have a lot of things I'd like to work on. One of them is I'd like to write a monograph, which is to say a paper maybe of 100 pages or so, on Leonard Cohen, and in particular focusing on Leonard Cohen's religious music. He's got, you know, a lot of his songs have Jewish, specifically Jewish and religious content to them. In fact, last week, I had a short article published in the Canadian Jewish News on this topic. So, I could see doing other kinds of writing along the way, but my big projects, I hope, will be fiction, because it's tremendous fun. It's really fun. It's really fun building a world and, you know, making people up out of nowhere, and trying to build a plot and place and character and theme and all of that.
It's almost like creating your own little universe.
Well, it's called world building. That's what it's called when you learn about this stuff. You build a world, and regardless of whether you're building a world in science fiction or historical fiction or contemporary time, you have to build that world. It's not something any writer can take for granted. So yeah, it's a lot of fun.
Do you like all your characters?
Do I like all my characters? Well, the Shmuley Shimmer character, who's the engine of the book, I painted him to be more sympathetic than one might think on account of, because of what he did. But I agree with the fate that I put in the hands of Nick Bones, which I'm not going to say lest anybody should read the book, and I'll spoil it. So I guess the Shmuley Shimmer character is pretty unlovable. All the rest, you know, I guess you gotta. I mean, it's an interesting question. I don't know what other writers would say. I guess you kind of have to like your characters. And they'll also tell you that that drawing a good villain is always a lot more fun than drawing just a good guy. So in that sense, the Shmuley Shimmer character was trying to figure out what made him tick. It was a lot of fun.
You have to take a lot more care to explain why he's a villain.
Yeah. Yeah. I guess the kind of rule of thumb is if your main character is unlikable, then no one's going to read the book. I don't think my main character is unlikable, and I think his AI computer, Maggie, is pretty funny, and she's supposed to be sort of both wise and a friend and the comedy relief in the book, which I think happens a lot in the book.
Well, it sounds good. Phil, I appreciate you taking the time to talk about it, and we wish you luck with it. And we'll talk to you again.
All right. Well, I hope so. So that's really good. So thank you very much.
Thanks for being on the program.
Thank you very much.
Rabbi Phil Cohen received his ordination from Hebrew Union College Jewish Institute of Religion in New York City and has a PhD in Jewish thought from Brandeis University and a Master of Fine Arts degree from Spalding University in Louisville. He resides in Greensboro, North Carolina, and his first novel, Nick Bone's Underground, was selected as a finalist in the Jewish Book Council's 2019 National Jewish Book Awards in the category of debut novel. If you have comments or suggestions about these programs, you can email me. The address is steve@middlechamberbooks.com. Our PodSafe music theme for this program is Cook the Books from the Indianapolis Jazz Orchestra, and we produce the program in the studios of Professional Podcasts, one of our Lubetkin Media companies here in Cherry Hill, New Jersey. We're on the web at beingthemedia.com. For everyone at the Middle Chamber of Books and Music Podcast, I'm Steve Lubetkin. Thanks for joining us, and we'll see you out there on the net. Take good care.